And we're live.
Hello and welcome back to another very appropriate episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano Da Silva.
Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. If you would like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us, and to find out what we will be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback.
Yes.
We would like to thank the recent reviews left for us on iTunes. We have 19 reviews so far, and they're all very positive, which is starting to go to our heads. The most recent review, by Lynx Sword, reads, "Love the cast, fellas. I signed up for an iTunes account just to give y'all a shout-out. I even had to give Apple my credit card info to do this. They now know where I live."
And they're going to turn into a human centipede if you're not careful.
Also, James DeMello sent us an email.
Right on.
Gentlemen, first of all, keep up the good work. Second, I allowed myself to be drawn into your wise words and chose to watch Sharknado Saturday night rather than go see Pacific Rim. Sigh. Lots of dots. And lastly, thank you guys for having me as part of your Saturday's frantic events. Was truly an honor. So, Wally, do you have an explanation for what he means by his last statement?
Yes, because on this podcast, all three of us were all participating in my 48-hour film project movie, Liberator, which will be screening Wednesday at 7 o'clock at Cinema World in Lincoln. This is for, obviously, our more local listeners. I wrote and directed the movie. Tim was my fantastic hands-on man, offering guidance as we went along, like, maybe we should try this, maybe we should try this. Hermano was my... He is my Scott Mosier to my Kevin Smith. And he's got the beard to prove it.
Whoa. And he's an amazing cinematographer.
He is, without Hermano's help, my movie would not look as good as it does going into this thing.
Aww, it's fan-freaking-tastic.
I'm blushing
right now. You can't see it because of my beard.
I wholeheartedly mean it. Everyone directed it. We shot it in a day, edited it the same day, and then ran like hell trying to get this thing out and in on the deadline. So yeah, these guys, without them, I would not be able to make the movies that I make at the moment. So round of applause to them.
Yay!
It's also why I haven't watched Jack this weekend.
In this episode, we will be talking about the highly anticipated summer film, Pacific Rim. But before we get into that, it is time for Yay or Nay.
Yay!
This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I guess I'm the only one who's seen anything other than one or two movies. I was able to recently catch up on rewatching Ted. It was on HBO again recently. And I know I talked about it very early on in this year. But I just decided to rewatch it. And, you know, with comedies, it usually takes a lot for comedy to make me laugh again, almost just as hard as the first time I watched it.
Yep.
And the first time I saw it was earlier this year. So, and this movie did that. You know, it's only been maybe 6 months since I saw it, and it made me laugh almost as hard as the first time I saw it. And there's very few comedies that make me do that, you know. So, when one... movie is able to make me laugh that much, it's pretty special, and this one is very special. It takes full advantage of the rated R. You know,
I loved the fact that it did that when it came out.
Yeah,
good old R rated comedy.
Oh, absolutely, and Seth MacFarlane humor. If you don't like Seth MacFarlane, if you don't like Family Guy or any of his other stuff, you're not going to like this movie. But if you are a fan of that, it even goes, you know, a little bit beyond that.
There's that one scene with the hookers that it brings me to tears every time I see it.
Yeah, because he does a good job of going to flashbacks as well.
Exactly.
You know, and
see me after that.
And Mila Kunis and Mark Wahlberg do a great job of fully investing in their role, you know, fully just diving headfirst right into the comedic moments. So I still have to give Ted a rousing yay. And I think the last movie, at least two of us are going to talk about in this segment, is the wonderful, wonderful sci-fi/asylum original movie, Sharknado.
See, this face is disappointing because I haven't seen it yet.
Yes. Yes, but Sharknado aired this past Thursday, and it was, in my eyes, it was probably everything you would expect from a movie named Sharknado, with the tagline, "Enough said." Hermano?
I would love to be on set watching them film this movie, because it's the type of movie where it's not like The Room or like Troll 2, where I think the idea was to go out and make a good movie, or an actual honest to goodness attempt at making a good movie.
There was no self-awareness there. There was self-awareness with Sharknado.
Yes. Like, I think they go out of their way to make a bad movie, because it's very obvious and in your face. Like, there's no way. I mean, unless Asylum is just like, let's just grab some dude off the street and have him direct this movie and see how it turns out. We'll just edit it at the best to our abilities and we'll put it out. Because there's really, really crazy stuff in this movie, like, that usually would not go. If the movie wasn't named Sharknado, like, people would tear this movie apart. Like wicked bad editing. The acting is awful.
It's a typical Asylum film.
Yeah.
But there's something else to it.
There is. The movie progressively got crazier, and that's when I started appreciating it, because it starts off, and it's almost, I almost got the sense they were trying to take themselves a little too seriously. Some things I noticed in the beginning where they just kept using the same aerial shot. Like, they must have only had the helicopter for, like, 10 minutes. Because they kept using the same aerial shot. Like, you'd hear characters describing a storm coming, and you look at the window, and it looks like there's a storm coming. Then they use an aerial shot, and it's a perfectly sunny day. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's so blatantly obvious. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they don't have the budget. But as the movie went on, it got insane. Like, it was just so funny, the lengths that what they went. It almost became a spoof movie of, like...
Well, also, the things that they do to create the dramatic moments.
Yes.
Like, when they go to Tara Reid's house, you know, and the streets are flooded, and it starts to get flooded in their area. So, the whole first floor gets flooded. And
the shark's in the first floor.
A shark comes into the first floor, but everybody except for two or three people are on the stairs watching three people deal with this shark. And I'm thinking to myself, why don't they just go to the second floor? Why don't they just go to the second floor? They're just screaming on the staircase, which is half covered with water. They have a woman. The main woman in this film, she has a shotgun. That's her weapon throughout the whole film.
Okay.
She is shooting sharks out of the sky with a shotgun. It is amazing. Her first action against a shark is stabbing it in the head with a pool cue.
I need to see this movie.
You have to see. I cannot. I was going nuts on Twitter, tweeting about this movie. People were... loyal followers were shocked that I was the one tweeting this movie. They were swearing with you.
They were waiting for me to do it.
But
I was busy with other things.
It was tremendously entertaining. Now, granted, I was semi-distracted during this movie. I was clipping my toenails.
If you want to call it that.
I was tweeting, you know. So... I think if you have some distraction, like if you're playing Angry Birds or something while watching this, and then look up during the key moments, I think you'll be fine, you know?
Yeah, I agree. There were times where I was just looking at my phone during the portions of the movie where there's nothing really happening. It's just characters driving for long, extended periods of time. And
with the just close-ups of them, and you know that it's a fake background, and the car, the chassis is shaking.
A car in a garage somewhere with a green screen behind it.
But I think the biggest... laugh I think I got out of this was when the same woman Tim was just describing, the girl with the shotgun, I forget the character's name, but there's a point at which she's been holding on to this secret the whole movie, like she has this scar on her leg.
Oh yeah.
And it was pretty much a spoof of Quint's speech from Jaws.
Yeah.
That's like, hilarious. That's insane. Oh my god.
It's literally laid out the exact same way.
There is a guy in this, it starts out in like a beach bar, and there's a guy in there that is like the barfly, and he's always sitting in the same spot. He brings his... when they're trying to escape that bar, he brings his stool with him and uses it as a weapon.
His lucky bar stool, he calls it.
Bar stool.
Oh, my God.
All right, now here's the thing. I haven't had a chance to check the Asylum website, though I'm a huge fan of Asylum. I've got a number of their movies in my collection. Is there a simultaneous release with this on DVD and TV?
I don't know. I have no idea.
No, I have to find a way to see this. I have to see this movie.
Oh, man, God. Oh, but it's available on demand.
And then I have to buy it on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Now, we haven't even gotten to the very end of this movie, and I know Wally has
seen it. I don't want
to
spoil it for me!
I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say the ending had me in stitches with just what happened. People who've seen this will know what I'm talking about, but dear God, what happened? I don't even know how to explain it. It's just so balls-out insane! Balls out insane, and I'm laughing my ass off. And it's the best screenshot I have for a desktop ever. I swear to God. Ian Ziering, when he read this, he must have been like, holy shit, how can I not do this movie?
Well, in the last half an hour, you're never going to see a greater half an hour of an end of a movie.
I swear to God, with this whole weekend was bookended just absolutely brilliantly. It was a brilliant, brilliant weekend. And I could not have been more... I swear to God, I think the ending of this movie is the most entertaining piece of film I've seen all year.
Whoa.
It probably is.
I haven't seen this movie.
I won't call it that, but it was pretty ridiculous.
Oh my God.
I mean, compared to the... I thought the beginning was kind of weak. The middle, I was like, okay, they're ramping up. The silliness is coming. And then once all that silliness was pretty much there for the entirety of the movie, I was in. I had a lot more fun than I thought I was going to, because I did watch Sharktopus, and I thought Sharktopus was awful.
I love Sharktopus!
Yeah, I guess before...
You're absolutely like, going to adore this,
then. Yeah, you're going to love this, and oh my God.
The only one I haven't really liked out of their monster animal movies has been Dino Shark, which I wasn't really a fan of. I was like, yeah, it's...
What about Piranaconda?
I have Piranaconda, and I like Piranaconda, and Arachnostorm.
Oh boy. I mean, as a complete piece of art, it's not. You can't say it, but as pure entertainment, I have to give it a yay.
I have a suggestion, actually, for Asylum, if they're looking for their next...
I keep submitting to
them. All right, submit this. I'm going to give you a freebie. I'm going to give you a freebie if you haven't thought of this already. So if they're looking for their next storm animal hybrid, hurricanes and hippos... Hippocane. Send it in, buddy.
Hippocane. Nice.
Well done. I mean, do you have anything else to say about...
I came with a good one too. Just gave me a brilliant idea for it. I'm going to send this one in too. Bearquake. It's just a fish opens and freaking prehistoric bears start coming out.
Can I really say yay on it? I mean, yay if you're into... if you're into, like, Troll 2 and movies that obviously aren't meant to be taken seriously, then, yeah, I would say yay. But if you're looking for, you know, actual, like, credibility, do not come see this movie.
Nice. All right, now it is time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming film or makes us want a bitch. Hermano?
Alright, I watched a teaser trailer for a movie that I had forgotten was actually coming out this year, but I was highly anticipating the new Alfonso Cuarón movie, Gravity.
Oh yeah.
According to IMDb, it's going to release on October 4th of this year. The synopsis is, astronauts attempt to return to Earth after debris crashes into their space shuttle, leaving them drifting alone in orbit. It looks like it's primarily going to follow the two main leads played by Sandra Bullock and George Clooney.
I think that's all you're going to have, man.
Yeah, and then you may have some voices. There are some voices listed on my IMDb as NASA voices. The teaser trailer really gets you pumped for this movie. It looks like
scary as hell.
It looks incredible, actually.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's just a teaser. I mean, all you really get is some astronauts floating in space. You see the debris crashing through their little space station. You see them frantically trying to grab onto anything to anchor themselves to, so that they don't float out into space. And then, inevitably, you know, they don't grab onto anything, and they're left to just orbit and float in space. It looked fantastic, man. Like, it is just a teaser. It's hard to really gauge what direction the movie's going to go in, or even, like, the tone. But, I mean, it's Alfonso Cuarón. I mean, the guy did, you know, Children of Men. He did probably, arguably, one of the better Harry Potter movies, Prisoner of Azkaban. So I'm hitching for sure.
Yeah, you know. However, I think that the trailer that we've seen is all the action you're ever going to see in the movie. I think most of it is just going to be them floating in space.
Yes.
And talking.
Yeah.
Trying to calm each other down. There may be little bits here and there, but I think it's going to be like
an open water situation.
Yeah, that's open water. The minute I saw this trailer,
but
yeah.
Even scarier.
Yeah, far scarier than open water. There's one more you can at least have. Hope. Yeah. At least hope.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still on the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, still on Earth. I am very anxiously looking forward to this
movie. I couldn't believe I had forgotten this movie was around. I would have definitely put it on my my most anticipated for the year.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe me too, instead of my house down. I will go next. Before Pacific Rim, there was a trailer that played for a little movie starring Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore and some guy I've never heard of, Ben Barnes. It's called Seventh Son, and this looks like a hot mess. What is Jeff Bridges doing? Why is he signing on to these films? First you see a trailer with him in RIPD, and then you see him in this, and then at the end of the trailer you see it's being released in the middle of January. Like, that makes sense. And Julianne Moore, I mean, she's had some really credible movies recently, and she's stuck with this too.
To be fair, Famke Janssen did play the head witch in Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters because she needed rent money.
Once again, that was a movie that was a few years old and had delays going up to it, and it wasn't released. It wasn't made in 2012. It was made in like 2009 or something like that. And it was really more of a role for Jeremy Renner. Anyways, back to Seventh Son. I couldn't even gather what the hell was going on in this trailer, except a bunch of dragons, a person turning into a dragon, a bunch of other... It looks like they're trying to shove everything at you, every kind of mythical creature at you, you know, and magic and all that kind of stuff. I couldn't gather a plot as to what is going on. And then, during the trailer, they say, based on the popular series, I guess? I don't know what series they're talking about. Is it a comic book series? Is it a graphic novel series? Is it a book series?
I've never heard of it.
Seventh Son? Yeah, no, I don't know. So, I mean, obviously they're trying to grab on to cash in on the Game of Thrones type of crowd, I guess.
I got a very big Snow White and the Huntsman vibe.
Yeah,
I thought they were redoing Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters again. I'm sitting there going, didn't we just do this? Like, is this like, alright, we fucked up this one, let's try it again.
Yeah. I have no idea what was going on, and like I said, it looks like a hot, steaming mess. So, you know, I am bitching about this trailer. So, Wally?
Alright, about to make a lot of enemies on this show.
Uh-oh.
I don't like Will Ferrell's comedy. I think he's annoying as fuck. Because basically all he does... He's in the same category I put Steve Carell in. But at least Steve Carell can play reserved, where he doesn't have to shout everything that he says. Like, I love Steve Carell in The Office.
Have you seen Stranger Than Fiction?
I've not seen Stranger Than Fiction yet. Which I want to, because I think that's going to be a different Will Ferrell than what I'm used to.
It is a very different Will Ferrell.
I'm used to getting. But, like, fucking old school Will Ferrell. I didn't even like the original Anchorman all that much. Because it's just like him just going, everybody, listen to me, I'm Will Ferrell! Fucking A. Anchorman 2 just looks like utter shit.
That's the trailer you're talking about?
Yeah, Anchorman 2. I mean, none of the trailer like actually even looks even remotely funny. It's like Steve Carell just, again, shouting at the top of his lungs because they think it's funny. You know what I mean? Kristen Wiig is in it, but even like the one like little like snippet you get of that, I'm like, eh. And then... They're going to probably give away probably the funniest part of the movie at the end of the trailer where he's at the dinner table.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And this movie just looks awful. And
well, especially if you're not a fan of the first one.
I'm not a fan of him, period, but I was hoping, like, it's just, a lot of people are making, like, a big, you know, like, are excited for this, and I'm just
Because the first one is a very popular film.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I don't get it. I've watched it a couple times. Not a fan.
I can't wait.
Not at all. So I am certainly not hitching at all.
It's not my favorite Will Ferrell movie. I'd say it's somewhere in the middle for me personally. But it's one of those movies I don't think I'm going to run out to the theater and watch it. I'll just wait till it's on TV or I can send out for it.
Hmm. All right, let's get into our discussion of Pacific Rim.
Gypsy Danger reported. report to Bay 08. Kaiju, Category 3. Pilot-to-pilot connection engaged.
Gentlemen, your orders are to protect the city of 2 million people.
Then let's go fishing.
The plot. As a war between humankind and monstrous sea creatures wages on, a former pilot and a trainee are paired up to drive a seemingly obsolete special weapon in a desperate effort to save the world from the apocalypse. The director, Guillermo del Toro. The actors, Charlie Hunnam, Idris Elba, or as we like to say, the next James Bond, Rinko Kikuchi.
You have to say the next James Bond.
All right, Wally. It is very appropriate that this is episode 69.
Nah!
Why don't you just ejaculate all over us right now?
I'm not, because I want to default until you guys are done talking.
Ooh, you're pulling a me.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. You want me to go first?
Sure.
You know, I was looking forward to this movie. However, I don't have the same connection to the whole, you know, vibe that you got in the trailers of the Neon Genesis Evangelion or any other of those Japanese animes, you know. Because, you know, I've never really watched any of those. I just don't have a connection to those type of movies. But looking at the trailer, you know, I was like, this looks spectacularly amazing, you know. And what I saw, it lived up to that, I think. I was in awe most of the movie. It just the scale of what Del Toro put on screen in front of me. And that's what he did consistently throughout the movie, is he showed me the scale of these creatures and these robots. And that consistency led, helped me continue in awe throughout the whole movie. So, it's a very cliche story. It's a very traditional narrative in general. But that doesn't matter. You know, I put this on the level of, like, Independence Day, but I think it's better than Independence Day because of the scale and scope of it. At the time Independence Day came out, nobody had ever seen anything like that, and that was amazing. And I still really enjoy that movie. But this movie, you know, kind of puts it on a different level because I think just of the technology that's available nowadays. And I thoroughly had a blast with this movie. You don't go into this for the acting, because the script, the overall script and the line delivery isn't that great. But there are moments here and there that really give it a personal touch, especially with Mako's story and her backstory, which I think was one of the strongest parts of the movie, especially when she's flashing back to her childhood, or that scene in her childhood. Idris Elba, overall, I think the cast does their job. It does what they're given, you know? But you don't go to see the cast. You go to see the giant robots fight the giant monsters. And the battles are spectacular. And they got to the battle, you know, where the three of them are fighting the two monsters at the Bay of China, I think.
Tokyo.
And it's this epic scale battle. And then I'm thinking to myself, this isn't even the end of the movie. This isn't even the climax. I'm like, holy shit, how is this going to end? I think the location of the ending I was a little bit disappointed in, but I still had a blast. And they keep featuring new elements into it. Well, first off, I have to talk about the opening of this film before the credits. It gives you everything you need to know. Everything you need to know about
the inception of the
robots, the technology, and the history, and everything like that within a concise... Well, I mean, before... there's like two sequences before the opening credits, really. It's like the first half is the explanation, the second half of the opening is the Charlie Hunnam story, you know? So that first half of that is brilliantly told, I think. Overall, I really had a lot of fun with this movie. Armando?
I just want to start with talking about my theater-going little adventure. So I get to the theater, and I get in line, and there are these six young girls in front of me, and like about 17, 18 years old, and they're trying to go see This Is the End. And I guess one of them is 17 and doesn't have an ID and can't get in.
Okay. Which theater was this at?
The Dartmouth Mall.
Okay.
So the ticket lady's not letting her go. So I hear all this going on, and I'm like, man, I'm so tired. I just want to get in this movie. I just want to go in and watch it. So they just stand aside, not knowing what to do, because the other five girls have already bought their ticket. So I go up to the girl, and I'm like, do you want me to just buy your ticket, and I'll stand with you guys, and we'll just, you know, you'll be able to get in the movie, and you can just go watch your movie. They're like, okay. So then I buy the ticket, but I have to say, I need two for This Is the End. Pacific Rim, the showing I went to, is in 3D.
Oh, Jesus.
So if I'm buying This Is the End, which is a non-3D movie, no 3D glasses for me.
Oh.
So I'm like, I realize this instantly, and I'm like, shit, I need 3D glasses. The movie's in 3D. There's no way around it. I'm not going to watch it all
blurry. Did you go dumpster diving?
No. I all of a sudden have
you
to...
did not.
I have to fess up to it and be like, can I just have a pair of 3D glasses? And she's like, why? The movie's not in 3D. And I'm like, I know. I just like to collect them. And she just knows what's up, and she's like, she doesn't even care. She just gives me the 3D glasses, and I give the girl her ticket, and I go watch my movie.
Wow.
That being said, I did watch the movie in 3D, and I honestly could not have had higher hopes for this movie. It's everything I've ever wanted since I was a kid. I feel like he must have somehow gone back in time and watched me growing up and listened to all my prayers of, please, God, make a live-action giant robot movie. I just want it so bad. Cartoons are great and all, but I want to see the real thing. And he said, one day, kid, I'm going to do it for you. The technology's not there yet, but when it is, I'm going to do it. I promise. 30 years later, Pacific Rim, and my mind was blown. It was so fucking good. Everything Tim said... the beginning starts off with great exposition, just kind of briefly explaining how these robots came to be and where the kaiju come from, and how they really don't know why they're there, and blah, blah, blah. You get to meet the characters. I agree with Tim, it is a generic story. It's a story you've seen a million times in other movies. Main character with a cross to bear, maybe a little unsure of himself, gets pulled back into the job, meets up with someone else who's also unsure and has a little secret, you know, past that, you know, she's hiding. A lot of tropey stuff. None of that stuff mattered to me because it was always... The movie's made so much better by all the action set pieces. I was worried that because of the scale and scope of this movie that maybe you were going to get maybe two or three big action scenes with the robots. And everything else would just be character stuff, maybe some human fight scenes or just, you know, other filler scenes. And it wasn't that at all. There was tons of, like, giant robot fighting monsters.
You know, that was one thing I was afraid of in the opening scene, because in other typical big monster movies, the opening scene, you don't see a clear shot of the monster. Mm-hmm. You know, like, think back to the Roland Emmerich Godzilla movie. Uh-huh. You didn't see anything clear.
No.
Even in Independence Day, you didn't see anything for a while. No. So, and in this, you get clear shots in the opening scene of monster versus robot.
You get not only a clear shot, a daytime shot, maybe one of the only daytime shots in the entire movie of the kaiju tearing apart the Golden Gate Bridge, which is another tropey thing, because the Golden Gate Bridge is the easiest target to just destroy every single time. But... none of that stuff mattered, man. This is literally my dream come true. I've been begging for a Neon Genesis Evangelion movie. There were always rumblings as early as, like, as recent as, like, 9 years ago. I'd heard rumblings that they were in the process of developing a Neon Genesis movie. And I was so looking forward to it, and then it just got scrapped for whatever reason. Maybe the technology wasn't there at that point. No excuses anymore, man. They did a bang-up job.
Well, I'm happy for you that you got your you know dreams answered, because my dreams were always either Transformers or Voltron, and with Transformers, Michael Bay just took my child back to and Serbian filmed that, you know.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is the closest thing we'll ever see to a live-action Voltron movie, you know?
Not necessarily, man. If this movie does... I hope this movie makes, like, $1 gazillion.
No,
because
it came in third place this weekend.
I know, but I just hope the overseas stuff is enough to push it over to where the point where other studios just all of a sudden go giant robot crazy and start buying up all these properties, because I would love to see a Voltron movie or fucking anything, man. Macross, Gundam, like...
Oh, Macross would be cool.
Macross would be awesome, man.
I would like to see that.
I can't say... I can't, like, shower enough praise on this movie. The only other thing I want you guys to just realize is that this movie cost $190 million to make. Lone Ranger cost $225 million to make. Someone needs to explain that.
Yeah.
Because this movie's CGI and just...
It's tremendous.
Is insane. Like, it looks fucking gorgeous. I know a lot of the action does take place at night, but you gotta realize, like, entire cities, entire areas were fucking CGI'd. Oceans were CGI'd.
Yeah.
Like, that is incredibly
also
difficult.
He does a fantastic job of mixing in practical effects, especially the suits and the heads that they're in, you know, and the machinery that's all around them. That's all real.
Yeah.
You can tell, you can feel the texture there, you know, and it's tremendous. You know, I will say, though, that there are moments where it does drag a little bit. You know, I think this movie, at 2 hours and 15 minutes long, it is slightly long. You know, I think that there's some parts with Charlie Day that, especially with his interactions with Ron Perlman, that could have been, you know, trimmed a little bit, maybe even completely excised. I think Del Toro was just doing a favor to Ron Perlman, because they're friends, you know, and they've done a bunch of movies before.
Well, Ron Perlman was in his first movie,
Kronos.
Yeah, I watched that. I didn't have as much problem with Charlie Day's stuff. I know he is supposed to be the comic relief allied with it.
I think he does a fine job, but I just think that this might be a little too much exposition at times.
Oh, trust me, I was always begging for the giant robots to come back every time it cut to him. But I mean, I didn't have as much a problem. I agree, if there was anything to cut, it would be some of those sections, but I was fine with the length of the movie. I didn't feel like it ran long. I was just floating, like, 5 feet above my chair. Like, I was just... I was seated
in a position where, you know, the screen pretty much enveloped my vision.
Yeah.
And I was in awe from moment one, really. I had my mouth agape, and I'm like, oh my god, this is so amazing. This is like... just tremendous.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm trying to reserve my joy with you know, I'm trying to temper it with more critical praise, critical analysis as a movie, you know. But I mean, it's just a typical big action movie that I guess.
I mean, I can. It's very difficult for me to be, like, analytical toward this movie, like, critically. It's what I've always wanted. I'm not going to spit in the face of, like, begging for a giant robot movie and finally getting it. And they did a really, really fantastic job. Guillermo del Toro did.
Okay, so in the movie they try to develop this. I love the explanation of mentally connecting with the robots using this. How do they call
drift.
It? The drift. And needing two people, because one mind, it's too powerful for one mind to control.
That's right.
You know, so needing the either hemisphere, you know, controlling the hemispheres of the robots. I mean, that's a tremendous idea.
Yeah.
And I wish, though, that there's a scene where Mako and, what's his name? With
Rally.
Who?
Rally.
Rally. Are going to be paired up. You know, and they have, I guess they're holding tryouts, you know, fighting tryouts with Raleigh to see who would be a good partner. But to me, I think it would have been better if they just said, Mako is going to be your partner because she's an up-and-comer and she's ready for this. Let's have them figure each other out, you know, partner up and see how it works. And then have a couple of different struggles, you know, instead of the whole fighting sequence. So that, because you see them team up for the first time, and it doesn't go well. Then the next time you see them, they're in action. They're in complete action. So that jump right there, I'm like, that didn't really work for me.
That's a definite nitpick of mine, because it's a very cliche thing to have a character fail in a previous scene, and then when they're needed and when they're called upon, they rise to the challenge, and it's just unexplained why all of a sudden they can just partner up willingly, no problems.
Yeah,
I have to let those things go, because sure, I feel Hickey draws, if there's any one movie that Guillermo drew great inspiration from, I'm sure Wally will agree, it's, I know we've said it a million times, it's definitely Evangelion. There are straight up conflicts in this movie that are directly, I think, inspired by Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yes.
I'll get more into that maybe in spoilers, but lastly, before Wally, and I'm sure Wally's dying to say something, if you're fearful of 3D, you guys didn't see it in 3D, right?
No, I didn't.
No, I saw it in 2D.
3D is actually worth it in this movie's case. I thought it looked gorgeous. I couldn't believe the 3D. I don't know if it was shot in 3D or was post-converted. If it was shot in 3D, it looks great, like it should. If it was post-converted, this movie should be the poster child for where post-conversion is at this current day, because it looked awesome.
Speaking of looks, it's great how I could tell what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Every single shot, I could tell what was happening. There was not a moment where I was like, what the hell is going on? Like Michael Bay did in the Transformers movies. You could never tell what was going on.
It's all up-close parts of boring mechanics.
Yeah. And in this one, it's the camera is far back enough, and everything envelops the screen, but everything, you can tell what's happening, and I was so grateful to Del Toro for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's obviously Del Toro was a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Is a fan himself of everything that you guys have talked about in the past. He knew what to do, and he finally got the money to be able to do it, and he delivered. Delivered.
Agreed.
Let's get into spoilers.
Okay.
All right, Wally.
Well, this was my number one anticipated movie of the year, and I couldn't have been more disappointed. And just the fact that it didn't come out sooner! Son of a bitch! way to completely eliminate me from the beginning half of the discussion.
What?
You went right to spoilers, dude.
That's what you wanted.
No, I didn't even get a chance to give my take on the movie.
You said wait until
right
we
to spoilers.
Done.
Well, pause.
No, we can go right into spoilers. I'll start talking about spoilerific shit. Okay, your nitpick. That is the exact same storyline as Dance Like You Want to Win.
Yes.
And that was, I loved every second of
that.
I knew
you were going to pick up on that. I was like, wow.
This is Dance Like You Want to Win.
Yep.
And then you have the part where he calls for the rocket arm. That's from the fucking Big O.
Big O.
And it's like rocket arm, like rocket elbow. I'm like, rock? That's the Big O. And then.
The sword?
My whole thing was like, this thing has a sword too?
This is
the best thing ever!
Wally is ejaculating all over us right now.
From the first 15 minutes, the first 15 to 20 minutes where you're actually seeing the first kaiju battle with Gypsy Danger. Mm-hmm. I'm like, first off, people were complaining earlier about, well, Gypsy Danger is kind of a dumb name for him. I'm like, go fuck yourself, alright? That's an awesome name for a robot. And then you see them get into the white suits and they're putting it on. I'm like, this is gonna get awesome. And then you see the head drop into the body. I'm like, this is Transor Z. Transor Z's head goes into his body. All right, I'm still in.
Now, what did you think of their code names for the kaiju? Every time they would pop out, they'd call him Knife Head.
What is that from?
It's the same exact thing in Evangelion. They would always give code names to the angels.
All the angels had code names. Then they had some other weird ones. This one's called Ochoi, and this one is Knife Head.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a weird naming
Leatherback
convention.
And I was just like, wow, man, he's really drawing a lot of inspiration from every,
there's some weird video game, I don't know if you noticed the Russian mech
mm-hmm.
does Gunjack's battle pose
mm-hmm.
from Tekken 5,
mm-hmm.
where it punches its fist, it goes oh, it's on Donkey Kong.
Dude.
And then the Australian people have the cool Macross, it almost looks like Fexter. From way back in the 80s, that old computer game that could turn into a jet. I'm like, this thing could turn into a jet. I'll have to eat a bullet or something like that, because I don't think it's going to get any better for me this year.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see. We had Rocket Arm. We had the thing has a sword too, which is Eva's AT knife.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, just watching this going, son of a bitch.
I also got a sense of Voltron, too. Like, how he just makes... Voltron would just make his sword appear. Like,
yeah,
just,
it falls like a chain. And, yeah. And it finally becomes like a blade. I'm like, this thing has a sword, too. Son of a bitch. The arm that turns into a plasma cannon. I'm like, both arms can turn into a plasma cannon? I'm in! This robot's awesome. And then, like, the whole idea, the concept of the drift... is fan-freaking-tastic. Mm-hmm. So, because I heard people, like, talking about, like, why does it have to be twins? I'm like, I'm pretty sure it doesn't have to be twins. And I was like, but I wonder why there has to be two pilots. And like, oh, it needs to split the neuro load. I'm good with that. That makes sense to me.
I would have liked a little bit more of the other pilots, you know, at least showing them in action a little bit more, you know, like the triplets in the Crimson Typhoon and the two Russians. I know that they're not the main characters and not the main robots, but I still would have liked a little bit more of them.
I was excited to see we see Gypsy Danger get fucking beat the smithereens in the beginning of the movie, so like he's not a mech pilot anymore. All right, this is kind of like Top Gun with robots. If you think about it, because he's Maverick, he's like, I don't know if I can do this. Yeah. Like, you know, my brother and partner got killed, and like, you need to engage, Maverick.
That's an Eva thing as well. Remember, in Evangelion, Shinji stops piloting.
Yeah,
for like a couple episodes, and then his friend becomes a pilot.
Becomes a friend. Toji becomes a pilot.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, and then that's what.
And then something happens to Toji.
Yeah,
nerds.
But. Well, he's like lost his like, and then like, well, when they show you a mech and they turn the corner, I'm like, it's back. They rebuilt Gypsy Danger, and then they had the giant robo freaking reference where all the monster that can make the EMP pulse happen. Mm-hmm. Gypsy's totally nuke. I'm like, that's giant robo, because when the Eye of Fogler happens, nothing that with a Shizuma drive ever works. But giant robo for some reason keep attacking. And then they're like, oh shit, it's nuclear. We got to put it on ice. But this.
I need a towel. Jesus Christ, I'm coated.
I saw someone.
It's like a Wally Bukkake.
Right before I actually saw the movie, like my phone had buzzed with a couple of of our Twitter reviews, and I was like, wrong, wrong, wrong.
Well, of course,
people were expecting.
You obviously know you're biased because it's tapping into everything you've ever wanted, right?
Pretty much. If these things had transformed to like jets or like something else, I would have been like. I don't know what else to what
maybe
else
that's in
to
the
do.
Sequel.
The ending I would say caught me a little bit by surprise, the way they did it, because I thought they were going to go one direction and they completely went in a completely different direction.
Okay.
I had figured like with just Elba having radiation sickness that he was going to pilot with the other Australian mech pilot's son, and then he'd be the one with the nuke that would blow it up, and he'd eject him at the last second, so he'd rise to the surface, and he'd sacrifice himself. But then they both sacrifice themselves. I'm like, all right, where are we going with this?
That didn't surprise me at all.
And then the whole thing with like they're drifting into the monsters. And I'm like, they manufacture them? What? And then the explanation is to like what happened prior with the dinosaurs. And I'm like,
oh, yeah,
that's a cool explanation too.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I was, like I said before, I was slightly disappointed as to the location of the last scene in, deep in the ocean, because I just liked so much of what was in the air, in the atmosphere, and that I wanted maybe just another daylight, fight scene instead of another dark fight scene. Mm-hmm. But even so, it was a badass scene where that swimming kaiju comes and he just splits it right in half with that sword and
charging right after.
Yeah, I mean it's just an epic scene, and then it's a Category 5. We've never seen a Category 5 before.
I had no problem with the final scene of the movie. I thought it was fantastic, the location wise and everything, because. You just see like how the odds are stacked against them, and then all of a sudden, what such a geek moment to like be like, there's another one emerging, and they're like, how big?
I was like, it's a Category 5.
It's got to be. You knew right away they were going to say Category 5.
It's like Twister.
The whole rest of the movie, they're saying Category 4, Category 4, and you just know like this is going to be the big one.
This is like,
and he pops out, and he just fucking screams, and I'm just like, oh my god, I'm gonna fucking poop.
There's only the only one really scene I actually have to say like was only the my only nitpicky thing was the pregnant monster.
Oh, yeah.
Because that scene went on too long for
me.
Where, like, oh, it's pregnant. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, what are we going to do? Like, Gypsy Danger's already gone back and it's already damaged. Like, Gypsy Danger took it took everything it had to, like, stop these two monsters. Like, they have nothing left and they'll say rebuild it. Then the second monster's on, like, I'm like, we're fucked. And then it starts running around and then it chokes and then it comes back to life and then it chokes again. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And then eats Ron Perlman.
Yeah. And did you guys see after the credits to see?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another one of those, like, we're going to infuse some levity here, some comedy. If I had to cut a scene, I maybe would have cut that one.
I want to go back to talking about Mako's past, and that little girl who played her young self was amazing. She did such a great job.
That was the most brilliant scene in the entire movie. As far as, like, genuine, like, awesome, holy shit moments, that scene was fucking fantastic.
And genuine emotion, too, yes. I think. She played it brilliantly. The whole scene played out brilliantly. And I love the end where Idris Elba comes up from the shoulder and you just see the sun shining.
And he's like,
it's like a big hero moment, like, sun behind them and shit. And I'm just like, dude, not even that, man. That scene where she's running and the camera's facing her. And you just see this fucking giant kaiju just right behind her. Oh my god, man.
Monster.
I was like, this is fucking amazing. Phenomenal scene.
Yeah. And I also love how her character doesn't get involved, like, as a love interest to Charlie Hunnam's character.
I was happy with that. I was so like, nervous toward them when they're on the tube. And, like, I'm like, don't...
It was just like brother and sister.
Don't kiss him and bring him back to life. Don't, like, you know... Yeah. Don't do it. And then, like... And they even, like, basically said, like, sometimes the sensors don't work.
Right.
And he's like, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The other scene that reminded me of... People aren't going to want to punch me in the face, but... The other scene that really reminded me of an Eva scene was the scene when they first try to link... they try to do the drift, Raleigh and her character. And she starts having, like, that flashback, and you see her losing control... And enabling the plasma cannon.
Yeah,
that reminded me of the freak out that Rey has when she first tries her new model.
Yeah, and it goes. It starts going crazy,
tearing apart the room.
It starts trying to grab its head and something like that.
So many scenes. Like, I just saw so many scenes that reminded me of Eva. I was just like, man, give me the fucking Eva movie.
You kind of already got, like, your Eva movie, because, I mean, they even have, like, that fluid that drains out.
Yeah.
So they can, like, sync up better.
Yeah.
I love the term neural handshake.
Yeah.
And seeing Clifton Collins Jr., like, there's, I'm like, isn't that El Haran from Crank? And, like, one of the cops from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the Veggie Cops?
Going back to the opening, did you like the opening, Wally?
I was almost crying. I was like, this is, like, the best thing I've ever seen. This is, like, my number one movie of the year so far. Something will be hard pressed to try to knock it out of the one spot. Hmm. I'm like, I've been fed utter crap to this point, like, for the Hollywood system. I'm like, I love you, Hollywood. We can make up again.
So there wasn't anything in the trailers that kind of spoiled anything, or you're like, I've seen that, or anything like that?
I mean, there were some shots I was like, I wonder what that's all about. Like this, the last trailer I saw was, I think, the TV trailer. That's where you see the Russian mech doing the gunjack, where it's, like, punching its fist together. I'm like, what's going on there? Because that thing looks like it's either in the middle of a fight, or... Like, because that looks like something you do, like, when you, like, beat the shit out of something, and you're like, come on, bring out more, I want more! And then... I also love the fact that they call every weapon shot, like, when they need it, like, plasma cannon! I'm like, that's, like, in every, like, giant robot movie that I love, it's like...
They have to call it...
Blazing sword!
Yeah.
Plasma cannon!
Like, every action...
Shoulder rockets!
Has to be preceded by what they're about to do. Giant robot punch! No! And just like, oh my god. So fucking awesome.
I'm surprised it wasn't a rocket punch somewhere in this.
Yeah.
You know, there was that whole scene where, you know, Charlie Day was running around, trying to find Ron Perlman, and then he gets stuck in the bunker with the civilians. And that scene where the kaiju breaks into the bunker, and it looks like he's almost about to, like, mind meld with him. And I wish that the kaiju had actually done that, so that whole scene of figuring out what the real purpose of these kaiju were was done right there instead of continuing on with the whole pregnant kaiju and all that kind of stuff. I think if you did that, that would have trimmed the movie enough for me to be able to say this is a perfect movie.
Yeah, that's really the only thing I also thought was visually jarring, because you know that there's not a monster there. So Charlie D's got all this room behind him to move, and his only thing is to lean back.
Yeah, it's just, he's reacting to nothing, and you can kind of tell.
Yeah, he's leaned all the way back, but, like, he could just, if he was backed up against the wall, I think if there was, like, a pillar behind him, and he couldn't go anywhere.
Another wall of people.
And, like, you see, like, kind of, like, try to brush his face, and he turns his head, and it kind of, like, swishes around for a second, as opposed to just him just, like, all this space around, because everyone's surrounded him, they don't want to go anywhere near him, because they know, because they think, the monster wants to eat him. I dug Ron Perlman's character. The fact that he wasn't even Asian, he just changed his name from to his favorite historical character in his favorite Chinese restaurant from Brooklyn.
That was good.
His character looked cool with, like, the gold shoes and and all that. I was like, I can't really find any faults in this movie. I mean, you're not going to go see it for the acting. I didn't go see it for the acting.
Of course not.
I wanted giant robots punching big monsters in the face. Giant robots punching big monsters in the face.
I didn't even think the acting was all that bad. Like, you guys are making
it... No, it's not...
It's a script, really.
There's a couple of parts where, like, the dialogue is just bad.
Yeah, it's just a little too over-melodramatic.
Yeah. Idris Elba was a badass in this movie. Idris Elba?
Yeah. I thought the dialogue and the script kept in line with what I have come to expect from, like, giant robot animes. Like, you never get, like, incredibly great... dramatic, like, great writing. Like, you just get, like, enough to service giant robots.
Well, okay, the emotional beats, like Idris Elba's speech did not last long enough. Wasn't really as powerful as I expected.
Yeah.
I was expecting full Bill Pullman from Independence Day, and it wasn't as grand as that speech was. You know, I keep referring to and referencing, comparing Independence Day, because that's really the only comparable movie I think I can go back to.
Yeah.
I think the emotional beats in Independence Day are stronger than in this movie.
Yeah.
Except for Mako's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, anything else? Do you have any semen left, Wally?
The character of Riley is, like, he's pretty awesome. He's, like, he's a badass without actually going over the top with being a badass. He's just really good at what he does. Like, I kind of wish that the other Australian pipe would have lived. You know what I mean? Because I love their rivalry. It was like, it's Iceman and Maverick.
Yeah, that's exactly who he was.
You know what I mean? Iceman. Like, he was Iceman. But then he gets his ass handed to him when they try to fight in the hallway. He just beats the fuck out of him. But, like, their fight was pretty awesome. The stick fighting people were, like, I hear people going, in the theater, I'm like, this is exciting. This is, like, two people, like, fighting with giant sticks. Like, this, you're going to see this later.
That scene didn't really... It just didn't feel right to me. I don't know. I
dug it, because they're trying to find, like what they're looking for to see, like, where your similarities are. Like, when you're fighting, like, and you're just going on instinct, they want to see the other person's instinct, too. So, like, if you're going to swing at the head, you know what I mean? They might be swinging at your head at the same time, so you might have to, like, change your tactic. So they're watching to see how many times they sync up, which I thought was pretty cool. I love that entire fight scene. I was sitting there going, I do hope that, like, she gets, like, the upper hand at least one of these matches, where it's not, like, him, like... taking, like, one swing is, like, one. And then she, like, does, like, this elaborate, like, whap, 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 whap. And then she's, like, 1-1.
I thought that scene kind of reminded me of the training.
Where they had to dance on the DDR pads.
Yeah. I felt like this movie was almost, an homage to that episode. Because a lot of similarities where the two pilots have to fight as one.
Yeah.
Where in this one, instead of having, like, one person pilot each of the robots, they have the two people share the load.
Yeah.
I just felt like there was a lot of similarity there.
Who is it? I'm trying to think which character was it. It's like, there was a... like, the Australian guy. He's like Oscar.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna run headlong into battle!
Yeah, very braggadocious, very, like, you know... forthcoming with, like, I'm better than you, I'm just gonna try to knock you down every step of the way. Like,
you know what, it's funny, the Australians, I honestly didn't even realize that they were father and son until later on in the movie. And I was like, oh,
I love that, the fact that they were five. I love that.
No, I'm not saying I didn't like it. I just didn't realize it. You know,
well, they mentioned it at the very beginning where
it's
like,
it was barely glossed over.
He says it while they're having dinner. He's like, sometimes I don't know whether if I should have hugged him more or kicked him in the ass.
And that's when I realized it. Sir, I didn't realize it.
We both know which one it is.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the reveal towards the end of the movie where Gypsy Danger is fighting that kaiju that's right outside Tokyo, and all of a sudden it's revealed that it has wings.
Oh, yeah.
And it just starts picking the robot up and flying it into space, and I'm just like...
But what's great about it...
I'm like, now what do you do? You don't have flight capability?
Yeah, as that kaiju is taking him up, it's also smashing him into
buildings.
Into the ground, and it's just like... Such a realistic thing, you know? He's just trying to take off with this huge weight. It's just the physics in this movie are amazing.
I like to see the look on the animation crew's face when like Guillermo del Toro like, or their boss walked in and said, "Here's what we're gonna do, and we have this much time to do it in."
Yeah.
What? So that was gonna add to the Oscar thing. Oh, did you guys like pick up on like the really cool music change during
the music? The score in this movie is fucking amazing.
Like my favorite part of the score is when you see Gypsy Danger dragging the cargo ship in, and you hear like the Wild West music, like it's showdown time. He's just absolutely like, please somebody say, I'm gonna beat you to death with this boat. I really, if I was in this pilot suit, like I would seriously just say that out loud.
Yeah, yeah.
Hope you're ready, kaiju. I'm gonna beat you to death with this boat.
Yeah, the score. I mean, oh man, what's his name? I just had it too. Who did the score? Ramin Djawadi, and he's done a number of things before as well. He did the first Iron Man, Prison Break. He's done a lot of TV, like Game of Thrones. That's what he's well known for, is the Game of Thrones, which is an amazing theme, you know. So he's done a lot of music, but this by far is standout. This is just a tremendous score.
I'm going to go see this movie
Prison
again.
Prison Break.
Yeah. First season was good.
I'm going to go see this movie again, actually. I want to see it in 3D next. This was... I want to see if it has the same... If it hits me in the same... In the face, like a Yagura and a Kaiju the second time around, and I go to see it in 3D, see if it still blows me away. So I'm going to have to go see it in like a nice, good 3D theater. Because the one at the Dartmouth Mall, which is where I saw it,
actually, that's where I saw it in 3D, and it wasn't bad. It looked good.
Every time I've gone to the mall, there's always been some sort of weird problem. I'm not going to chance spending 3D money on a theater that I haven't had a good history with.
I didn't spend 3D money.
Well, as you didn't.
I bought a ticket for This Is the End.
This Is the End. As I like to do, people who liked this also liked After Earth, Oblivion, Ender's Game, which hasn't even come out yet, Cloud Atlas!
What? Yes. It's because there's Asians in it.
Super 8, and Transformers 4, which is in production. What the fuck?
What did our listeners think?
Well, we didn't ask for
movie
reviews this time. But are we ready to get into grades? Are you done ejaculating?
I am spent for now.
Molly, let's hear your grade.
You guys should know this is coming. It's A fuck plus.
Hermano?
I give it an A.
Yeah, I would give it an A minus, so that's an A average from the first time I watch this podcast.
Man, what a giant love fest of review. You should all hug right now.
Guys, it's so hot and we're all sweaty. I know, I don't want to do it.
I mean, obviously you would recommend this, but I mean, would you recommend it to everybody? Is there an audience? Like, there's probably an older audience that just wouldn't even get this, right?
Teenage boys up to about age 50.
Yeah. 50. I mean, like, one of the people that I work with, I was, like, kind of ranting about the movie earlier. And they looked at their trailer and like they went, meh. I was like, that's because you're a girl. You didn't grow up with this like I did.
Yeah, there's nothing in here for girls. I mean, even a little...
Unless they're nerds like us. Yeah.
There's even a slight romance angle, a little tinge of romance potential, and not enough to get a girl to go see this.
There are plenty of nerdy girls, and I'm sure we have nerdy listeners that would love to see this
movie. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I sat there, I was like watching this going... The only side thought I had during this time, I'm like, you know what, Charlie Day or... this guy who's playing the second physicist scientist. I'm like, these guys would both be fantastic if they got into the cast of Doctor Who, like as the next Doctor, especially Charlie Day. Like those two guys struck a chord with me. I love their back and forth. How it's like me and Tim actually when we used to work together.
Yeah. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can talk to us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for all 19 reviews so far.
Please keep them coming.
If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be discussing a film that I have been very anxious to talk about, The Place Beyond the Pines.
That's the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch. Alright, let's test this bad Larry out.
Yeah, with what?
I don't know. Say something. I'm fucking tired, dude.
Why are you so tired?
Because we just shot a movie in 48 hours. And I was up late editing, and Hermano, I'm surprised Hermano's like as like chipper as he is today, because he was editing and rendering and pulling his hair out as well.
Yep.
Half his beard is gone.
The way I feel right now, I'm essentially retired from.
No, I need you. Don't retire. Let it pass.
I'm not probably not as tired as you are, but I only got 5 hours of sleep because my son decided that that was the night he was gonna just wake up every couple hours.
But see, next year our son will be a year old and he'll be sleeping the night. Let it pass.
Yeah, I felt like this last year too. I mean, it's so stressful the weekend and your it initial is. Thoughts. You're not in your right mindset yet. So by this time next year, I might get that itch again to be like, you know what, I want to do it again.
Well, I'll be the one poking you for the itch. I'll be like, hey, come on, let's do this, come on, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to need to, because right now, I'm not feeling it.
Next year we can try doing Boston if you want.
I'll even I think that would be even more. How is that even going to be any less pressure?
Well, no, it's just that I know Hermano liked Boston, so maybe we'll do Boston instead of Providence.
Right? I like Boston mostly because I thought the competition was stronger there. Yeah. For whatever reason. Not that, you know, no knock on Providence. There were good films there as well, but I felt like, you know, it felt like maybe like one out of every three films I thought were pretty strong at Boston. I'd say the equivalent of maybe one out of maybe eight or nine at Providence. So,
I mean, I'm just excited to go up against our former teacher.
Yeah, like, he's on our screening, right?
He's on our screening. Yeah. We got Matt. He's going to be on our screening. I can't wait to see what he got. He got Romance. Yeah. So I want to see what he did, because he's usually pretty damn good at like putting stuff together. So
yeah.
I'm certainly curious.
Well, yeah.